Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Georgia Diaz, who is an Alexander Technique teacher in Amsterdam. She is also has been a singer, a professional singer, for 15 years. She sings bossa nova, and she's also been in Alexander. I don't know, how long have you been an Alexander teacher, Georgia? I don't remember. Give me.
I graduated in 2004, April 2004.
So she's been a teacher for about 6-7 years, and we've already had one conversation about the Alexander technique and singing. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the Alexander technique and breathing. Georgia, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Robert. Thank you for having me again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Could you begin by just giving our listeners a short description of the Alexander technique?
The Alexander technique is a very simple method. And as every very simple thing gets to be very difficult to explain, but it's actually a way of achieving the best results of your body with the absolute minimal muscle effort. So you wake up, it's a way of waking up the connection of mind and body together and stay away from habitual patterns.
Mm-hmm. And how, I know as a singer, as a professional singer, breathing is maybe more obviously a concern than for most of us. What have you found in terms of your original experience with Alexander lessons and how they impacted your breathing?
I decided to become an Alexander teacher once my breathing completely changed with me doing less and less for it. That's when I decided to train, because I really wanted to understand what was going on with my breathing, with my body, because I was taught how to breathe. Every singer and every instrumentalist is taught how to breathe, and we all have ideas. Even if you're not a professional singer, people do have ideas of how to do the breathing through meditations. People try to get better, solve body problems through breathing better. And as a good dedicated singer, I did my breathing exercises every day. And I come from this generation where belly breathing was largely taught all over. Now people know better that this is not a way. And when I only could get rid of this idea of belly breathing when my teacher, Ron Murdoch, was my first teacher, when he told me, use your common sense, where are your lungs? That's when I started thinking, that's true, I cannot breathe with my belly, that all these ideas of low, breathing all the way to your belly and all this interference, you're actually interfering with the breath. When I could get rid of all that, then my breathing, my whole mechanism started to breathe the way it wanted to breathe. The natural patterns took over, and I caught myself breathing on the flanks when I was not singing.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that reminds me of something that another teacher that I interviewed, we had a conversation about musicians and the Alexander technique. And she made the point that most musicians have absolutely no idea about how their body functions, she said, but except for singers who have an idea and it's almost always wrong.
Yes,
Which
that's
I
true.
found a fascinating comment, but I believe it is true that singers when singers come to me for lessons, they often come with a very strong belief system about how their breathing mechanism works, and not so much how it works, but what they need to do to make it work well. And pretty much always, those ideas are, at least from my perspective, are harmful. They
Yes.
get in the way. So when you said earlier that having Alexander lessons showed you how to stop doing that, a lot of that stuff, I mean, I think that fits in with Alexander's ideas that he articulated. I believe he even said somewhere, the breathing takes care of itself, or some, he had a phrase like that. I'm not sure the exact words, but I think his basic approach to breathing was get out of the way.
Exactly.
Exactly,
Exactly.
yeah.
That's what we need to do, because in a singer's case, but also saxophone players and every wind instrumentalist, we all have ideas of how to breathe, and sometimes those ideas are right, but the way they think they have to do it is wrong. Because the habitual patterns are so integrated in the body that it's very difficult for them to stop doing all these kind of things, and what is called the support of the breath, and it's all by forcing, it's all by using too much muscle effort in order to achieve something that the body has it all for us to work, to use. The thing is that most singers, we forget in general, we forget what we are saying. We forget to actually get down to the lyrics and what does the lyrics are saying and how do I interpret it? So once you know exactly what you're saying, your brain knows how much oxygen is going to be needed in order for you to say the whole phrase. That's why people don't lose their breath when they are talking, because they know what they're saying. But singers, they tend to learn the melody and the words together. So it gets a little bit in a confused pattern already in the learning process. And then, well, I remember learning in how to where to breathe exactly in a song. I needed my pauses, I needed my breaks, and I knew that in this and this and that point I should breathe. But through the Alexander technique, I learned to allow my body to do it for me. So I am simply concerned with the contact with the ground, and so that everything will function much better, muscles will be free, and therefore the mechanism will breathe for you.
So when we talk about letting breathing happen, it sounds awfully easy, and yet I'm sure it's been your experience that it's not always that easy to put into practice, for perhaps for your students and maybe for you when you first started taking lessons. What do you see as the obstacles to that? Why is it not something you can just say to someone, hey, you don't really need to do all that work, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, wouldn't that
because
be great if you could just say to your students, "Hey, you know what? Just let go of all those ideas and start singing." But
that would be
I but
wonderful.
we both know, I'm sure, that that doesn't work quite that easily.
No, because first we have to get rid of the habit on breathing that we created through the whole, since the first time we think how to breathe. That's when you start to create breathing habits. Not only when you want to breathe consciously, so but also in a posture when you're sitting, especially in school times, when you're a teenager, we are collapsing. This is the age of collapse. We need to collapse, otherwise it's not cool. And then you're restraining your instrument and creating, unknowingly creating breathing patterns. And then later, in case of a singer of a wind instrumentalist, then they're going to try to get rid of it by trying to do something with the breath. When what we actually need is to stop doing all the things we created so that the body can function for us.
And I think what happens with certainly with singers is that if you do succeed in helping a singer for a short period of time to let go of those patterns, and their singing becomes much fuller and freer, and perhaps other people there will hear that. Often the singer is a bit dubious about that. It's almost as though what they're doing is not legitimate somehow. Have you found that to be the case as well?
Cannot be that easy, you mean?
Well, and it just seems like they have an idea that a certain amount of effort is what singing is about, if it's going to be, for real singing on a stage kind of thing, or professional singing. The effort is sort of built into it, and if you take the effort away, and even if their singing gets better, according to people listening, there's
They
this,
won't recognize it.
yeah, they're skeptical. They're very skeptical at first. I've seen that happen quite a bit, and I wonder whether it's well, I don't know. I guess it's just that tension is so tied in with their idea of what proper singing is. How do you, when you're working with someone and that kind of thing comes up, how do you approach that? How do you get them to be okay with not working so hard?
Well, I try to get strange ideas into people's mind because they come with strange ideas anyways. So I try to get the attention away from the breathing so that the breath can work for you, for them. And getting more into the message. So when they know what the message is, then the instrument will work and they will feel the easy on breathing. And I also have work a lot with thinking differently in your body. It's like telling little white lies to your body, like if your nostrils would be right in between your eyes and your nose on the in-breath. So that is impossible. Everybody knows it is impossible that your nostrils are in between the eyes. But if you truly believe that, then the natural those habits will be so confused that the natural patterns will have to take over. And then they feel themselves that by thinking differently, the body reacts differently, and the breath is just flowing without without them having to do too much effort for it, or without having to do effort for it.
So in a way, it's almost tricking someone into breathing more efficiently, getting that experience, and I mean, it's not a bad kind of a tricking, but sometimes I think you have to resort to that kind of thing to get someone to let go of a pattern they believe is necessary.
Yeah, it's tricking the habits.
Tricking
the person.
Not the person, really. Yeah, exactly. No. Yeah, yeah. do you have any thoughts at all about breathing I don't know whether it's true in Holland or not, but certainly in the States, there's been an explosion of childhood asthma. And I don't know to what extent that's due to pollutants in the air, but it seems to me that there's some pretty odd ideas around about breathing in children. Have you done any work in that area?
No, I never worked with breathing in children. I do know kids with asthma. I guess pollution is also an effect of it. But I also believe there's a lot to do with all the stress there is in this age for us. And I don't know how it is in the United States, but kids here in Holland, they have so much pressure in doing well at school and doing their best at school, and they have to be almost on their toes to do their best.
Yes, that is very much the case here for a lot of kids, where the pressure to get into a good school, get into a good college, for example, where kids are doing hours and hours and hours of homework and are totally scheduled out. I mean, a lot of kids today almost have no free time because they've got this lesson, that lesson. You know, and I'm sure that must have some impact on their breathing.
Yes, yes.
Do you have anything else that you would like to say about the Alexander technique and breathing before we bring this conversation to a close?
Well, Alexander was known as the breathing man in his times.
Yeah, when he came to London, he was from Australia originally. When he first came to London, the turn of the century, the early 1900s, that was his nickname. He was called the breathing man, and because he was so effective at helping people undo the tensions that got in the way of their breathing. That was his one of his first bits of fame, I guess you could say.
Yeah, but I guess it's because he was the only one who came to the principle that your whole body is breathing. It's not only those specific muscles that are breathing for you, but if you have any muscle tension in your feet, is going to affect your breathing.
It's all connected, yeah.
It's all connected. And
he did not, as far as I know, ever advocate any kind of breathing exercises. I think that would have been the furthest thing from his mind. I would guess that he told any student who came to him to forget about those exercises.
Exactly, and that's why it is so difficult for people to get to it, to forget all this, because we are pumped with the idea of having to do it. But through the Alexander technique, you learn how to allow your weight to really travel to the ground. Therefore, you come up by it. It's your whole instrument is up. All the muscles are free and freer. And therefore, your body can breathe for you, and the lungs will do their jobs, and all the other muscles that are concerned will be happily and free to work.
So maybe a message here for anyone listening to this who is intrigued and who feels that maybe their breathing could be improved. If you come for an Alexander lesson with a teacher, be prepared to give up some of your preconceived ideas of what you need to do to breathe. You may be delighted to discover that you don't really have to work so hard, and that you can breathe much more efficiently with less work. Would you agree with that?
That's a blessing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a blessing, but it does require, I think, what we have to be candid here. It does require the student to be willing to let go of those old ideas, at least for, you know, during the lesson or when they're experimenting with themselves.
Well, I find that people are reluctant about it because they truly believe that they have to do something. Mm-hmm. But the body shows the pupils what not to do eventually. We do need to invest time in ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the body will do it for us. And that's the best proof for a singer. When the body is just working, when you are not even singing and you're breathing on the flanks, that's enough proof.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we end the conversation here? For anyone listening who's intrigued by what we're talking about and is willing to experiment, contact an Alexander Technique teacher in your area. And if you live in Amsterdam, contact Georgia. We'll put a link to her website by the interview. Georgia, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you very much.